This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi there, good morning, 9:38 in the morning. It should be 8:45 a.m. on Wednesday, actually. Sorry about that. Anyway, good morning. If you just joined us, it's now time for Pressing Matters, just like what we do every Monday, as we have the founding editor of KiniBiz, P. Gunasekaram, who joins us for that. Good morning, Guna. How are you?
Morning, dude. Wow. I'm fine, thanks.
Looking good and very nice and dapper. Yeah,
looking sharp today, nice. Dude. Guna.
Nice and sharp. Guna, you've got a couple
You're very kind.
Couple of very sharp stories as well to share with us this morning, don't you? We have we're going to be talking about MES in just a little while from now, but let's start off with Petronas and why it could be possibly, well, going overseas.
Yeah, okay. Petronas and the KiniBiz online, we did a series of articles on this, on Petronas' Canadian and other conundrums.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So essentially, this arises very largely because oil prices have fallen very sharply, although they have recovered somewhat. They are still about 40% off, you know, from the previous US $100 plus. So Petronas' earnings are quite badly crimped. Margins are down. And it is questionable whether they need the kind of capital expenditure that they have budgeted for in the past. You know? So it raises questions of what's the future for Petronas like, you know. On a more immediate basis, the new CEO, Wan Zulkifli, has said that dividends to the government will be pared down to around $26 billion from around $29 billion previously. But the company is still extremely cash rich. If you look at its balance sheet, it has got about $130 billion in cash. So we raise the question of whether it should be in overseas markets at this point of time.
Correct. Yes.
Right. But let's just give some context. The 1974 Petroleum Development Act, it's a very short act, about 13 pages. This was the act under which Petronas was set up. So it vests all the oil and gas reserves in Malaysia with Petronas and expressly gives it the mandate to develop the resources. So it owns the oil and gas reserves in Malaysia. Oil majors such as Shell and Petronas are concessionaires. So what the concessionaires do is they operate the concessions based on a profit-sharing formula, which is now thought to be around 20% to oil majors and 80% to Petronas after cost oil recovery. And cost oil is oil that is allowed to be deducted for recovery of costs incurred in bringing the wells into production, so to speak.
All right.
So the act actually does not provide for Petronas to go overseas. There is no mention of the act saying that Petronas has got a mandate to go overseas and have operations there.
Right.
But Petronas must take instruction from the Prime Minister, and which means that it has to do anything that the Prime Minister asks it to. So it reports to the Prime Minister, Petronas as a corporation.
Gunnar, before we delve into that question of whether or not Petronas should go overseas, whether they should just remain a domestic player, I want to know, is Petronas run like a corporate entity, like a private entity? Is it run efficiently like it would as a profit-driven company?
All right. It's incorporated under the Companies Act. So it's pretty much a fully government-owned corporation. That's what it is. It is a company, but it is wholly owned by the government, much like 1MDB.
But is it efficient in your opinion? Is it run efficiently?
By most accounts, it has been run without any major accusation of corruption against it and so on. And it has brought in a lot of money for the country. Many people like to say that Petronas is the most profitable oil company in the world. But there is a reason for that, because it owns the oil and gas reserves in Malaysia, which is not what the oil majors do. See?
Correct.
So it's like you have your wealth in the ground.
Right.
So when you extract it and you get 80% of it, even though you don't do any work on it,
you still make money.
You have very little capital expenditure or capital to put in, but you will make tons of money.
Correct.
So it is basically the holder of the nation's oil and gas wealth. So it has to be a very wealthy company as a result of that.
But until today, nobody knows what the accounts are like, yeah, because it's never published.
The accounts are published now, and they actually do it on a quarterly basis.
Quarterly basis.
So, okay. Which is a huge improvement from what they used to do before.
Yes. Okay.
And
they do report their accounts.
They report their accounts on a quarterly basis.
Wow.
You know, so which is actually pretty good. But what is not available in the accounts is a breakdown of their overseas versus their domestic profit.
Right. Right.
So that's what we find lacking as when we try to analyze the accounts.
Hmm.
See, the most profitable business is of course domestic, simply because they are owners of the oil and gas. You know, so. But overseas, it's very different.
It becomes a level playing field when it goes overseas.
Yes.
Ah.
So it means that it has to compete with the others, you know, including Shell, Exxon, who have much deeper pockets than Petronas.
Right, yeah.
You know, as deep as Petronas's pockets are, the oil majors have much deeper pockets. So if it makes a wrong move overseas, it can actually lose a lot of money, and I mean a lot of money in this case. You know? So case in point, all right. Canada, the topic that we are discussing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the original investment is anywhere between 15 to 20 billion ringgit. Right? This is the largest investment overseas that Petronas has made. The full cost to bring the project to production is something like 100 million ringgit over 25 years.
Wow.
And this is essentially to develop shale gas, which many think is viable at a price of oil above $60 a barrel. So it may not even be feasible anymore. So what do you do? Do you still go ahead? Do you still take a bet that the oil price will increase? Are you prepared to shut down production when your oil price goes down and then to start it again when it goes up?
Mm.
And then on top of that, while Petronas has already invested this 15 to 20 billion ringgit, not all the approvals for the project have been obtained.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So you need native Indian approval for building LNG terminal pipelines, etc., you know, for instance. So you also need an environmental study, you know. And all of this is not obtained. And despite an offer of billions of ringgit, in this case, close to 3 billion ringgit to native Indians to allow to as compensation for the port to be built, the native Indians have turned down the offer. No? So, and Canada is not the only one, although it's the largest. You know, Petronas has also dubious investments in places like Sudan, which was wrecked by civil war. And I think part of the production fields could not produce at optimum levels for a while. So how clear, it's not clear how badly these overseas operations are. How badly they have affected Petronas' overall profits as such.
Okay. Petronas is still in Sudan, isn't it?
It's still operating in Sudan, but it has already pulled out of exploration from some countries, such as India and Uzbekistan.
Yeah.
So exploration is actually a big bet that you make. You know, if you do not strike the oil, Then you have to write off hundreds of millions and sometimes billions of dollars of money that you have put in.
It's a calculated risk, of course. But why do they go overseas, Gunnar? I mean, is there not enough business domestically?
I think the one of the problems is, I mean, Petronas accumulates a lot of cash, so it looks like the government has made the decision that it should become one of the oil majors, a major oil company, and become involved in exploration overseas.
Right.
But I'm not sure whether that's the best thing to do, because this is really high risk, and not all all countries have national oil companies which are going overseas to undertake these projects. So perhaps it's a question of what to do with the cash, and perhaps it's some kind of misplaced reasoning that we really need to get the oil from overseas in order to secure our oil supplies.
Mm.
But if you look at the situation, we have enough energy for our own purposes. Now, I'm saying energy, although we may be net importers of oil, we are actually very large net energy exporters.
Right, to gas.
So it's not a security thing, really. And anyone can actually buy oil on the open market. You don't have to go overseas and engage in exploration to actually source oil. So I think this question really needs to be asked, because this is the you know, as big as Petronas is, it may not be big enough to undertake these kind of bets overseas.
Right. Mm.
The latest being that LNG project, yeah, where they got turned down by the Lax Squalams.
Yes.
That's the Aboriginals in Canada.
Yeah, I was just looking it up as well. Yeah. That was a huge blow, actually. Because without that, there's quite a huge investment over there that's going to be just sitting there and doing nothing.
But exploration, right? Like we were saying, you know, it's a calculated risk. Have we exhausted all exploration options domestically before we go overseas? Is that the case?
I think when you compare the reserves that we have, the reserves for oil are far less than the reserves for gas, for instance, you know. But there are still many areas which can be explored in Malaysia itself.
Okay.
You know, so it's not as if we have exhausted all the the entire exploration options in Malaysia.
Well, I also read that Petronas is looking into mergers and acquisitions, M&A activity. So what are they doing with all that cash, right? They're sitting pretty on a huge pile of cash. What are they going to do? Maybe buy up another company.
They did. They bought Progress Energy.
Is that a better
way? Yes, Progress Energy was the Canadian one.
Was the Canadian one.
Right? That was your 16 to 20 billion ringgit investment. You know, but they did sell down part
chunks
of the
of
it to Indian, Chinese, and Japanese companies.
And they
have made some profit, but again, that's not disclosed, you know, so we don't really know.
Exactly.
So they have about 62% of Progress still in the books now.
Mm.
But I mean, you should note in the last full year accounts, they wrote off over 20 billion in investments, you know, write down in investments because of the falling price of oil. So I do not know how much of this would be, say, the Canadian investments, for instance.
Mm.
So
no breakdown provided, right?
Yeah, no breakdown provided. So if you're talking about what can they do with the money, do maybe what Noe did, set up a sovereign fund, not like 1NBB, but a properly run sovereign fund, which can make, you know, basically it invests excess all money in investments across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So for the benefit of future generations. I think the Norwegian one is often touted as an example to the rest of the world.
Yes.
So Gunnar, just a quick check with you. Petronas's profits, they're tightly linked with the dividends that they pay to Putrajaya, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever money they have to pay a percentage of that as a dividend to Putrajaya. So isn't it best to, I mean, you know, to they want to invest that money back into the company?
Well, the thing is, I think Petronas has been doing that for the longest time ever since the inception of Petronas.
But the dividend, the ratio, the percentage of dividends have fallen over the years.
In recent times, it's fallen because of the falling oil prices. But if the technically, I mean, the shareholder of Petronas is the government. So if the Petronas, if the shareholder tells the board of directors, I want more dividends, Petronas will have no choice but to deliver it, you know?
Exactly.
And they actually do have the funds to pay the dividends, even maintain the old rate, because they have 130 billion in cash and near cash items.
Right. We move to the second topic that we want to talk about, Malaysia Airlines, Gunnar. Now, so the new CEO will be giving a media briefing today at 11 o'clock in the morning. Plus, it's also D-Day for the staff.
Yeah. So, Christoph Müller is talking to the press. I think this is probably his first press conference as such.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a media briefing. So, I think there is a lot of anticipation about this and what he's going to announce. I mean, this will be, I think, essentially the business plan going forward for Malaysia Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
But our Persian, I think we covered this story quite extensively in the Kinibis magazine.
Correct.
Yes.
Now, our Persian is that you need to improve the yields besides the cost cutting. Yes, maybe you can cut some of the costs. So certainly if you're shrinking the airline, you don't need a lot of people. You know, but the test of turnaround is not shrinking your bad businesses and just keeping your good businesses which are making money. And I think anyone can do that, you know, because this is an operation which is already making money. Cut off all the businesses, so you will turn a profit. The test of good business is if you can turn around some of the bad businesses. So that is what I think the challenge which is facing Müller.
Mm.
You know? So it's up to him to determine which are these routes which are unprofitable at the moment, but which can potentially be turned around. So, and if you can turn these routes around, then you have more profit for Malaysia Airlines. You know? So, you have to do cost cutting in a manner which does not restrict or crimp the future growth prospects of the airline. That's important.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, I've been reading reports that he wants to do that, definitely, for sure. He wants a free rein in looking at how to make the airline more profitable. Mm. But there was also, I mean, you're talking about 20 years of Malaysian Airlines being managed the way it was, and, you know, government intervention in where to set routes with bilateral relations in mind, right? So do you think that he will be given a free hand in revamping the new Malaysia Airlines?
I think he would largely be given a free hand, you know, to do this. I think, you were mentioning 20 years of, you know, mismanagement at Mars. Hmm. Maybe not all that 20 years now. I think we have to remember that as recently as 2008, Malaysia Airlines made a record profit, you know, its largest ever profit ever. So, and 2008 was what, 7-8 years ago?
Yes, yes. Yeah,
so, I mean, one could argue that things have changed substantially since then, but would it not be possible to get back to that kind of a situation when you could actually, just 8 years ago, compete with the best airlines? Mm. And it was a situation where Malaysia Airlines' yield, which is a reflection of the fares, was the highest among all its regional peers at that point in time, including Singapore Airlines. Isn't it? Mm. The figures show that. So, that is what, you know, we are talking about. It's not a hopeless airline. It's still got, in my opinion, it's got a brand still.
Yes. Right. Yes.
You know, and one should try and capitalize on whatever is left in the airline, which is good. I mean, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, essentially.
For sure. Yeah. Are you expecting anything, or are you looking out for anything for him to announce at the press con later? Maybe routes or what his plans are?
I really am not sure about the strategy. No, okay. If you're looking at, say, for instance, regional strategy, if you're going regional entirely, how are you going to compete with the low-cost airlines? So unless you go low cost, it's impossible for you to compete, you know. So I think you may have to have some amount of international presence and, maybe spend some time to build up these routes, you know, through tourism and so on, you know, which is what Malaysia Airlines used to do in previous international routes. So but now almost all of the routes are set to be cut except perhaps for London. So, but I think Christoph Müller probably knows what he's doing. Right now, cost is uppermost in his mind. But, right. You know, when he can get yields up, I'm sure he'll try and do that. He's an airline man, so he should know that.
Well, we'll all find out together after the 11 a.m. News conference. Thanks so much for joining us again, Gunnar.
Thank you, David.
And it's always a pleasure to have you over here with us as he joins us for Pressing Matters every Monday right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.